All right, so Be'ez Hashem, we will be doing counselor shiurim this summer. I think that's what the sign says. So we'll be giving, during your various chinuch slots. Those are optional, I think. So whoever would like to come and learn together each morning, we will have the opportunity to do so. So I think what I'm going to do for the counselor shiurim this summer, different than what I did past summers, is just discuss the different, each day discuss a different shiloh that has come up recently, basically the stuff I've been working on. So I've had this series going on for a while called From the Rabbi's Desk, and certainly North Woodmere kids know that I do this a lot in the shul. So here's a shiloh that is relevant to nobody here, but nevertheless, it's what I've been working on, so it's what's on my mind. So that's what we're going to talk about for the next half hour, whether you like it or not. Sorry. I guess this is one mandatory one, so too bad. But it happens to be very relevant to a lot of situations that might come up, and you'll see what I mean in a moment. I had the following shaila that came up last week, and I was working on it for a little bit. The shaila was that there was a girl, and anyone who was in North Woodmere this past Shabbos heard this shaila already, though did not hear the answer. There was a girl who was in seminary, and she went to a friend's apartment in Yerushalayim, for a Shabbos, or for, I don't know, for a night or something. And what do girls do when they get together? How would you know? You're boys, right? What do girls do when they get together? They do each other's hair. Boys don't do that. So, I hope. So they do each other's hair. So, anyone have sisters here? Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure you're paying attention because there's no way no one has sisters here. Okay, so if you have sisters, you've probably seen a certain vessel called a curling iron. It is an extremely dangerous weapon. A curling iron is this like long stick that turns piping hot, and its function, I think, is as its name suggests, that it helps to curl hair, right? That's how it works. But it can also burn stuff. You can burn people with it, you could burn carpets with it, you could burn all sorts of stuff with it. That's not what you're supposed to do with it, but that's one of its functions. So this girl was at her friend's house, and she was doing her friend's hair. So she was working with the curling iron, but then she had to go to the bathroom. So she took the curling iron and she stood it up on the arm of her friend's brand new couch, $6,000 custom-made couch for their beautiful multi-million-dollar apartment in Yerushalayim. And she put it on its stand, and it comes with a stand. She put it on its stand on the arm of the couch. She said, "You wait right here," and she went to the bathroom. She came back from the bathroom and she smelled smoke. And she's like, "What's that?" And then she realized that the curling iron had tipped over, landed on the couch, and had burnt a hole in this brand new $6,000 custom-made couch in the multi-million-dollar apartment in Yerushalayim. So she quickly picked up the curling iron and saw that there was a giant hole. I was shown pictures of this giant hole in the couch. That was like 5 years ago. Since then, they've been haggling over whether she has to pay for it or not and how much she has to pay. So the friend says, "Well, it's a $6,000 couch, so let's see. By my calculations, you owe me $6,000. She said, "What are you talking about? I burnt one little hole in one little cushion, and I didn't even do it. It did it by itself. I just left, and the thing just fell over. It happened all by itself. I didn't do anything, so I don't think I owe you anything. And if I do owe you anything, it's however much one cushion on a couch would cost." So who's right? That's basically the question. They've been fighting about it for 5 years. They're trying to finally settle the case. And I thought this was one of the most fascinating Choshen Mishpat Shailas that I've gotten in a while because it touches upon so many different topics. So let's talk about just even the topics that it touches upon. Anyone here, by a show of hands, ever learned Maseches Bava Kamma? Okay, don't worry, I'm not going to quiz you on it. Maybe I will. What are the four Avos Nezikin? Which is this one? I mean, this is a type of hezek. This is like real life hezek. You know, we don't have so many oxen going around and things like that. But all these sugyas are very relevant. What's this? What kind of hezek is this? It's got to fit into one of the categories, no? Ooh, so it seems like it might be Aish. What other possibility is there? What's that? Why would it be Aish? Let's go with that. Why would it be Aish? Does Aish have to be a fire? It doesn't have to be a fire. It has to be something that a ruach mitsuya, that a common wind, would cause this damage to happen. It's common when you put something, when you perch something up on the armrest of a couch, that it's fairly common that someone walks by and just the breeze that the person makes just by, you know, walking by will knock over something that's ever so delicately perched on the arm of a couch. Okay, so this might be Aish. What else might it be? Let's say I were to take that curling iron, chuck it up, and then it lands on the couch. That's Adam Amazik, right? Because then I'm the one that did it. This might be Adam Amazik. Okay, so it's some type of Hezek. Are you chayiv for Aish? Yeah, you're chayiv for Adam Amazik. All of them are you chayiv for. They're Avos Nezikin. So obviously, it would seem that she'd be chayiv to pay. So that's Aleph. Is there any counter argument? Any reason she wouldn't be chayiv to pay? It's a grumma. Why is it a grumma? Grumma means like something indirect. I did something and very indirectly the damage happened. I'll give you an example of grumma actually when we talk about another detail over here. Let's actually go right to that. Imagine, here, they're arguing about, you ruined my couch, you owe me $6,000. I did not ruin your couch. Your couch is in mint condition. I ruined one cushion. So I owe you whatever one cushion costs. Imagine you have a pair of shoes, right? And I come over to one of your pairs of shoes, one of your shoes, I take one of those shoes, it's an expensive pair of shoes. I don't know how much shoes cost. What do shoes cost now? They're an expensive pair of shoes. What? $200, okay? So I go and I take one of your shoes, the pair costs $200, I take a curling iron, and I burn a hole right in the middle of one of your shoes. So you say, you owe me $200. And I say, no, I ruined one shoe. The other shoe is in perfect condition. I don't owe you $200. I owe you... How would you finish that sentence? What? $100? Okay, possibly. Or I might say, how much could you sell one shoe for? I ruined one shoe. I owe you whatever you could sell one shoe for. How much could you sell one shoe for? I ruined something worthless. It's not worth anything. You can't sell a shoe for anything. So you could argue that I owe you $200 because I ruined a pair of shoes. You could argue I owe you $0 because whatever I ruined is worthless. Or you could argue I owe you $100 because one shoe is half of a pair of shoes and the pair of shoes cost $200. How would you look at that? Okay, so we got to talk about that also. Okay, that's... what if it was like... we said we're going to get to grandma. What if it was a pair of earrings with diamond and gold and whatever? I don't know. Right? So let's say the earrings cost $1,000. Earrings can cost that much and more. So get ready for later on in life. You're going to have to buy stuff like this. So a pair of earrings cost $1,000, let's say. I ruined only one of them. Now the other earring's not worthless because it's gold and diamond, so you could still sell it for $300, let's say. So one might say, well, okay, the one earring I ruined, that's $500. But I also took down the value of the second earring. The second earring used to be worth another $500, now it's only worth $300. So I should owe you the $200 for that also. You follow what I'm saying over here? Right, if a pair costs $1,000, maybe we would say each one is $500. I destroyed one of them, so that one's worthless now. So that one I for sure have to pay for. But the other one I devalued by $200. So do I have to pay the $200 for that? That's grumma. That I wouldn't have to pay for because I did direct damage on one of the earrings. The other earring was only indirectly damaged from the fact that I directly damaged the first one. So the $200 devaluation of the second one, that's grumma. That's what we would consider grumma. One more issue, and then we'll get into how we actually poskin about all this stuff. How do you assess damage? Meaning the couch is still here, so how do I assess how much I damaged it? There's a hole in it. How would you assess? Well, so the most logical way to do it is I take a look at what the previous value was, and before I doubt, the minute before that curling iron hit the couch, how much was it worth? And now how much is it worth? I don't know, how am I supposed to know how much it's worth? How do you tell how much something is worth? Right, let's assume that that's the correct way to do it. What was the couch worth? How do I know what it was worth? So what's the girl saying? I bought it for $6,000. The other girl might say, we should probably give these girls names. Girl owner of the couch says, that's a good name. Girl owner of the couch says that that I bought this couch for $6,000. Girl Mazik says, I don't think anyone would have paid $6,000 for this couch a minute before the curling iron hit the thing. Let's say you buy anything you buy brand new, the second you take it out of the store, its value plummets, right? You get, you know, when someone buys an iPad and then they return it a week later, brand new, can they sell it as a brand new iPad? They call it refurbished or whatever, right? And then you buy it on like, you know, some secondhand website for like half the price, right? Because as second you take something out of the store, its value plummets. So Girl Mazik says, probably this custom-made couch, which was made to fit your parents' multi-million dollar apartment, and probably doesn't fit perfectly in anybody else's apartment because it was made to fit the room. I don't know, what would people pay for that $6,000 couch? Maybe $2,000? So it was probably worth $2,000 before that. What would someone pay for a $2,000 couch with a burn hole in it? I don't know, $500? I owe you $1,500 at most. Or but girl owner of apartment, is that what we called her? Girl owner says, what are you talking about? We paid $6,000 for it. It's obviously worth $6,000. You think we're idiots and we paid for something that's not worth, you know? We just paid $6,000 for it. So how do we assess that damage? This is why it's a fascinating question. Let's say you bump into someone's car in the Cayley parking lot. You guys probably aren't allowed to drive it here. But let's say, you know, somebody bumps into somebody's car. So they make a scratch in the car. How much do you have to pay? Oh, so wait a second. We just said the way we evaluate damage is how much it was worth before and how much it's worth now. Now you're saying something entirely different, that it's how much it would cost to fix it. Maybe that what they should pay is however much it costs to fix the couch, assuming it could be fixed. Is that how you evaluate damage? How much it costs to fix something? What if the person's not interested in fixing it? When someone makes a scratch in a car that I own, I happen to lease all my cars now, but it used to be we would own cars. When someone made a scratch, I just, forget it. It's only going to get scratched up again until one of my kids really destroys it, right? Meaning, so just, you know, we'll just, what? It wasn't you, no. But two of my other kids have completely totaled. Thank God they're safe, okay? Yeah, that's, I would never fix it. I don't care. I mean, if someone bought a brand new fancy car, give me a fancy car. Fancy car. A brand new Ferrari, Tesla. You see where everyone's hasagos are. Okay, so someone bought a brand new Ferrari, and I scratched it, right? So for sure he does not want to drive around with a Ferrari with a giant scratch in it. But let's say I'm in like the BMG parking lot. You know where BMG is? Yeah, it's in small yeshiva in Lakewood. Yeah. Okay. So let's say I'm in the BMG parking lot, and there's a beautiful, beautiful 1996 minivan with dents all over it, and I back out of my car and I bump the 1996 minivan. The guy who owns it comes out, and he's like, I can't even tell what you did. I say, no, that scratch. He's like, the one under the other scratch or the one above the other scratch? You know, like, yeah, that scratch. So he has no plan on fixing it. He doesn't care at all. I still have to pay to fix that? Meaning I have to pay to fix, does it depend on what I'm damaging? Would you think I have to pay to fix that? But you're saying I would have to pay to fix that one scratch. The thing is scratched all over the place, dented all. But that was my scratch, so I have to pay to fix it. It could be, right? It could be I have to pay to fix it. The thing is, in the Gemara, it never actually seems to say that. The way we always seem to assess damage in the Gemara is what was it worth? What is it worth? Difference, that's what you pay. That's what you pay for it. So that's what makes it so complicated, because what you say is what most of us would naturally think.
Do you have to pay
Tsar
also?
Tsar?
Yeah, there's
not for damaging someone's property. Not for damaging someone's property. Oh, but you do raise another issue. What if it was my favorite, whatever, it was my grandfather's couch, right? Meaning I have a piece of art hanging in my dining room. I have no idea if it's worth anything, but it's worth everything to me because it was my grandfather's painting that, you know, hung in his apartment every time I would go visit him. So it's worth the world to me. So let's say someone were to come to my apartment, protesting global warming or something, and he throws blood on my painting and sits in front of it like this until the police drag him away, right? So how much does he have to pay me for that painting? So he's going to say, that painting didn't look like it was worth very much. You know, it's really old. It was not a famous artist. Didn't look like it was worth very much. And I say, but that was Zaites. It was Zaites' painting. That's irreplaceable. That's worth everything to me. So would you take that into account? So you wouldn't take Tsar into account, but would you take sentimental value into account? Right? Does that play a role? So all of this, just from a curling iron, we got to figure out what's what. So let's say in the few minutes that we have, let's try to go through what the halacha is. So first of all, what type of nezek is this? I think I spoke to a great expert in chasam mishpat. It's really good if you're a rabbi to, if you're not an expert in chasam mishpat, to at least know somebody who is. So there's a fantastic Talmud Chacham in Lakewood, New Jersey, named Rabbi Ari Marburger, who's a great, great expert in Chosh Mishpat. So I asked him what he thought this was. I was thinking Adam Amazik. Now, when a person damages, even if, you know, the girl Mazik says, it was a total accident. I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't even do it at all. I just purchased it on the couch. I thought it was going to stay. Total accident. When you damage someone by total accident, are you still obligated to pay? So Adam Amazik, Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezid, Bein B'Ones, Bein B'Ratzon, even if it's a total accident, you have to pay, even if it's totally not your fault. There is a Machlokas Rishonim, which is a Machlokas in Shulchan Aruch, if it's a complete total accident. Meaning, let's say I go to sleep and I happen to fall asleep right next to, give me something fragile, what could break easily? A vase. I don't know what has vases. Give me something else. What did you say? Okay, you were also saying glass vase? Okay, fine. That's always the case they give in yeshiva. But how often does that happen? Give me something right next to your glasses. Meaning we're in the bunkhouse or whatever, and you put your glasses down, on my bed for some reason, and I don't know why your glasses are on my bed, but I see them there. I go to sleep thinking, that's all right. I'm not going to break the glasses. I want my friend to be able to find his glasses. I'm not going to move them. And I go to sleep next to the glasses. While I'm sleeping, I roll over, smash the glasses. So that kind of onus I'm for sure chayev on. But it's not my fault. But it was an accident. Let's say I went to sleep while I was asleep. You're like, you know, I could really use a new pair of glasses. These are kind of old, so I would like to get paid for them, and no one would ever pay me for them. So while you're asleep, I put them right next to you. And then I wait for you to roll over. And then you roll over and you smash my glasses. So that's called ones gamur. That's complete, that's really not... When you went to sleep, it wasn't there. So that's a machlokas rishonim, whether you have to pay for that. Some rishonim say, yeah, Adam HaMazik has to pay regardless, no matter how much it wasn't his fault. In Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch passes that Adam HaMazik is chayiv even by ones gamur. The Ramah says, no, if it's ones gamur, if it's complete ones, it's patur. Is that relevant in our case? Is that at all relevant in our case? No, because this is definitely not an ones gamur. Right? Even if it's Adam, it's more likely, Rabbi Marburger pointed out, it's more likely not Adam HaMazik at all, it's more likely Eish. First of all, it happens to actually be a fire, right? It's a red hot coil. But even aside from that, it damages the way Eish damages. You put something dangerous in a secure location, and a Ruach Mutsuya brings it to a place where it could do damage, and that's exactly what happened over here. And for Eish, you're going to be. Anyone know what you're putter from an Eish? What don't you have to pay for an Eish? What do you say? Tamun, right? If something is hidden. Couch was not hidden. It was right there. It was right there in the apartment. So certainly, you're going to be chayv midin Eish. Now, how do we assess the value of the damage? So generally speaking, we look at what something was worth before, what it's worth now. The difference is what you pay. Right? That's generally speaking. Now, the thing is, there are a lot of items that we have that there's no market for. meaning let's say my glasses. Let's say I were to go online and I don't know what the secondary market websites are nowadays, what the popular ones are, but I want to sell, online. I put beautiful, almost new pair of glasses, barely a scratch on them. How much would someone pay for these glasses? You say? $2. Now, I happen to have not bought these glasses. My mother thought I needed new glasses, so she sent me to the store and bought me these glasses. I don't know what she paid for them. I'm assuming... What do you think? I don't know. Look nice. I'm assuming a couple of $100 for these glasses. How come I can only get $2 for them? My mother got ripped off? Don't say. but how could it be that I can only get... There are certain things that you just can't resell. No one's interested in buying them. So does that mean that these glasses are only worth $2? If you were to smash these glasses, don't do it, please, because I don't have a backup pair in camp. If you were to, and I'm totally blind without them. If you were to smash these glasses, it would be worth, you'd only have to pay $2? So it's a little bit difficult to assess how much it was worth before when there's no market for something. So there is a sefer called Nesivos HaMishpat, and the Nesivos says that, in a chinam, you can only, we assess the value of something based on how much it could have been sold for. And if it couldn't have been sold for anything, then that's it. Okay, so then it wasn't worth anything. However, there was a great gadol in Yerushalayim that lived not that long ago, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and Rav Shlomo Zalman disagreed. And he says, when you have a physical item, when you're dealing with something intangible, like the right to pass through my yard, how much is that worth? Okay, that's intangible. That's something that can't be sold, and there's no market for it, and therefore it would be worth $0. But when you have something tangible, like a pair of glasses, that there just doesn't exist a secondary market for it, we go based on what normal people would have paid for it to buy it brand new. I mean, I can't, if I were to sell you this shirt, right? What would you pay for this shirt? Nothing. It's got my initials on it. You wouldn't pay anything, although once the dry cleaner delivered it to the wrong address in my neighborhood, and a kid in the neighborhood was walking around with shirts that had my initials on it, and his dad is like, we'll just pick a name. His dad is like, Aaron, why are you wearing a shirt that has someone else's initials on it? He's like, I don't know, I thought the dry cleaners just put initials on the shirt. But most people would realize that, wait a second, I have no interest in the shirt with somebody else's initials on the shirt, so it's worth nothing, but I paid for it. How much did I pay for it? I don't know, when Charles Turwood has their deals, or whatever, whatever you get, three for whatever. So I paid for it. So if Shlomo Zalman says, we look at what I paid for it, meaning we look at what someone would actually pay for it. When there's no secondary market to be able to sell it, we look at that. We're going to leave out sentimental value. Let's say my Zaidi's painting. So that has sentimental value to me and to nobody else. There are some things that have sentimental value to everybody, or to a significant enough number of people that it actually changes the price. Right? Let's say I were to put on the market to sell a pen, a fountain pen, an old style fountain pen. What would that fetch on the open market? Very little. Let's say I would say, this is the fountain pen that was owned by Rav Moshe Feinstein as he was writing his Tshuvas Igros Moshe. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein's fountain pen that he wrote his Tshuvos. He wrote the famous Igros Moshe using this fountain pen. What do you think people would pay for it nowadays? A lot, right? Let's say someone paid $10,000 for it. So we say, well, that's just sentimental value. That's not what it's worth. So at that point, we'd say, if it's sentimentally valuable to everybody, so much so that it changes the market price, then the market price actually means something. Then it would actually be worth $10,000. So anyway, determining the value of this couch, based on what we know now, what was the couch worth before it was destroyed? According to the Nesivos, whatever you could have sold it for. How much could you have sold a custom-made couch built for that apartment to somebody, slightly used, to somebody who doesn't have the same layout apartment, that doesn't, how much could you have sold it for? Way, way less than the $6,000 it was paid for. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, How much would it be worth? Very close to $6,000. It's about what someone would pay for it when they're ordering a custom couch. And since that's a reasonable price, it doesn't seem to me to be a reasonable price, but it's, since if you're in the furniture, you know, market for fancy apartments, it's a reasonable price to pay for a couch. So that's what it actually costs. What about paying to fix it? You mentioned paying to fix it. So it doesn't say that anywhere in the Gemara they have to pay to fix something, but there is a comment of the Ravid, where the Ravid says that if somebody damages his friend's field by digging in it, the owner could require him to fill up the holes that he dug in it. Now that sounds a lot like what you were saying. The owner could require him to fill in the holes. Fill in the holes, that means the owner could require him to fix it. I would have said, based on all the Gemaras, the owner could require him to assess what the field was worth before, what the field is worth now, and the difference is what you have to pay. But apparently, the Ravid is of the opinion that if it's something that can easily be put back to its former condition, then that's really what you're obligated to do. It's just that normally things can't be put back to their former condition. And when things can't be put back to their former condition, then we assess the difference in value. Then we assess it based on difference in value. Where would that bring us when it comes to this couch? What would that tell us? Just pay to fix the cushion, right? And as long as you can pay to fix the cushion, as long as it could be put back to its former condition, that's it. That's all you need to do. You don't have to pay the difference. How much would it cost to fix a single cushion on a couch? I don't know, reupholster a cushion on a couch? Can't be that much. Maybe a couple $100, maybe. Right? So that's all they would have to do. Here's the problem. In the 5 years that they've been haggling over this, the store that they got the couch from closed. The material that all the other cushions are upholstered with is no longer available. So if they try to reupholster this one cushion, it would be like different than all the other cushions. So it can't be put back to its former state. So then what do you do? If it can't be put back, meaning assuming the Ravid is right, that really be ikar, the chiyuv is to put something back the way it was. And if you have a field where it's easy to do that, do that. And it's only if you can't put something back to its former state, then you assess what is it worth, what was it worth, difference, that's what you pay. So then what would you pay over here if you can't put this cushion back? So you'd have two options. One is the difference in value. The other is reupholster all the cushions. And then it will be back to the way it was. Get a similar fabric and reupholster all the cushions. Then it will be similar to the way it was. Right? That's already an expensive proposition. That's already going to cost, you know, whatever, like $1,500. Yeah. Oh, good question, right? Meaning, who gets to decide which probably the halacha would be, since most poskim don't even say like the Ravid in the first place, that you have the option of fixing it, probably it would be difference in value. But, you know, it could be that, you know, if they go to a din Torah, Dayan might suggest that this is an equally good option. But wait a second, why isn't this what about the girl's tiny that I only ruined one cushion, so I should only have to pay for one cushion? So is this more like a pair of shoes, or is this more like a pair of earrings, or is this more like, remember we said there's a difference between a pair of shoes and a pair of earrings. I burn a hole in one of your shoes, I for sure have to pay for the whole pair of shoes. Because the other shoe has zero, is worth zero without the one shoe. Or is this more like a pair of earrings, where it's still worth something, but it's, or is it like neither of those things? Maybe it's like, you know, let's say, you know, you come over to me and you rip my shirt. I say, oh my gosh, you ruined my outfit. Now you need to pay for my pants, my shoes, my shirt, and my yarmulke. And my tzitzis, with tchelis. Now, is that reasonable? But it's my outfit. Why is that not reasonable? Because it's not really an outfit, meaning it's a bunch of things you happen to have put together. The fact that things are near each other doesn't mean that you can view it as one big thing. So maybe I should view the cushion on the couch like the shirt and the outfit. That it has, what's that cushion have to do with any of the other cushions? I'll pay for that one. That's the one I damaged. So there are three possibilities of how to look at this cushion. You can look at it as like, okay, it's a cushion. I'll pay for the cushion. Or you can look at it as, I ruined the whole couch. I got to pay for the whole couch. Or you can look at it as, this cushion was part of a couch, and therefore it's worth X amount. The rest of the couch is still worth something, so I pay something in between. Meaning it's either like the earrings, it's like the shoes, or it's like the shirt in my outfit. What do you think this is most like? Again, with the shoes, you ruin one shoe, you got to pay for the whole thing because the other shoe's worthless. With the earrings, you ruin one earring, you pay for half the value of the set, and that's it. With my outfit, you pay for that, for just that one thing, what it was worth, and you ignore everything else. You ignore the bigger picture. So what would you say over here? Earrings, shoes, or outfit? Probably most like the earrings, right? Because it's still worth meaning the rest of it is still worth something, but it's a little bit like the shoes also, because no one would pay for it's unlikely someone would buy a couch missing a cushion, right? It's unlikely people would buy the couch on the chance that they might be able to make up another cushion to fill it in. Now what if it wasn't a cushion, it was just like a pillow on top of the couch? You know, couches have like, you know, 5-6 pillows on top of it. So then what would that be like? That would be like the shirt as part of the outfit, right? I mean, that's totally separate. That would be totally independent. So at the end of the day, what do you think we paskened over here? So here's the thing. Whenever it comes to a dini mamonos issue, whenever it comes to a monetary dispute, you can never, ever hear just one side without hearing the other side and dealing with it by hearing both sides talk about it. So they both wrote up their version of the story, which was pretty much exactly the same. There was one other factor that we haven't yet considered, and that is that girl Mazik said, I don't even know that I did it. I went to the bathroom, there were other girls there. Someone else might have knocked it over. What if someone else knocked it over? Then that person's obligated to pay. Oh, but why did you leave it there? Okay, fine, but you're still another mamazik. You're right, I shouldn't have left it there, but you're the one that did the damage. They don't know. There were other girls around. It might have happened. What do we call that if we're not sure if I even did the damage in the first place? What's the rule in Dine Mamanus? I say you owe me money. You say, I'm not sure you can prove that I did the damage. Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. In which case, girl mazik owes zero. Ooh, so that changes things a bit. So, like, how do we view that? So I asked Rabbi Marburger what he thought about that. He said, you really need to talk to both of them. You really need to get them both in a room together. They were not interested in going on a Zoom and, you know, talking together, but you really need to get them both together and figure out, is that really a suffix? Does she really think that someone else knocked it over and just didn't realize or didn't say anything and didn't bother picking it up after knocking over boiling hot curling iron that was burning a hole in the couch? Or is that just something she's saying because who knows, right? So what I advise them is see if you can work something out between yourselves. Be adults, figure it out. And if you can't, then we're going to have to do this all together in a room together. So what ended up happening? What do you think ended up happening? What do you think she ended up paying? She did not pay to fix it. She paid $800. Enough probably to pay for most of the fixing of the reupholstering of the cushions. She paid $800, they called it a day, and everyone was happy. Probably everyone was unhappy, but everyone was happy to put it behind them. So these are the kinds of questions that we'll discuss, and a lot of other different kinds of questions over the course of the summer. Looking forward to learning with many of you each and every day. Have a great, great summer, and I'll see you all around.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. Investment professionals reveal how they find their next great idea, what gives them their investment edge, and a few personal stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!